Jeff, let's start with Steph Curry, who was the big-time performer in Game 2. He was the one who, even if he wasn't the most efficient Warrior, hit the dagger shot. You think of it, the number of times he attacked Kevin Love. He actually took more shots versus Love than he did versus any other Cav in this game. He hit the big three over Jetty Osman after the Cavs had pulled out their main players to sort of put an exclamation point on this game. He hit that big floater. He was fantastic. He was pretty much normal Steph Curry in this game. How can the Cavs counter that? Steph is obviously like a top 2-3 player. Can you counter that? And if so, how do you do it?
I mean, the best way to counter him specifically is to just try to get the ball out of his hands by trapping really hard. But then that opens up sort of the rest of their guys, you know, especially if Draymond Green is the screener. He's a fantastic passer on the short roll. They've developed a chemistry on that short roll that, you know, is pretty much unparalleled throughout the league. And then if it's McGee or it's Jordan Bell or it's David West or it's Kevon Looney as that short roller, you know, those guys are decent enough at, you know, catching and making a play, or, you know, or they'll bring somebody up to the level of the ball way out by half court and have that guy be an outlet for Curry. And if you rotate early, Curry's, you know, really good at finding that extra pass. And if I'm being honest, I don't really trust the Cavaliers to execute a system that requires the three guys on the backside to all be on a string and communicating well and making the right reads, everybody at the same time, in terms of how they rotate to the guy with the ball, who rotates to the shooters. Everybody has to know the scouting report. And I just, you know, we've seen this Cavaliers team for 100 games already this season. That's not their forte.
Right, like trapping versus the Pacers is one thing. It's different trapping versus the Warriors. A couple of things I would say, you're right to point out that they are not a team that has done well or should be counted on to do well defending on a string and with communication. If you just look in the series, they've had a lot of issues. We're going to talk about this a little bit more and sort of what has become an issue with this to some degree, but they've been really bad versus slip screens in these two games. The Warriors a couple times have just run a pretty basic pick and roll, and whoever is setting the screen, usually for a Curry pick and roll, is just literally gliding to the rim and getting an easy basket. That has been a big problem. I think if I was Ty Lue and Mike Longobardi coming up with this defensive strategy to adjust coming into the next game, is I think I would trap just because. Bless Kevin Love for trying as hard as he has, and he's like not jumpy. Like Larry Nance, you know, gave up two buckets because he was super jumpy and reacted very twitchy to what Steph Curry was doing. Kevin at least like stayed grounded and fought and like was aware. He just can't hang, and it's no. We just know that. That is just there's a fact. There's a reason the Warriors hunt him down. The Cavs, it's weird to me that the one guy, the Cavs aren't switching when Jeff Green's on the floor. They're not switching Jeff Green if they can avoid it, unless they absolutely have to. I think they should probably do the same with Curry. You also could argue that if there's no Andre Iguodala, that things do get a little bit dicey for Golden State. This is where Sean Livingston becomes more important. Dicey's maybe the wrong word, because they're still going to have Durant and Clay and all these guys on the floor, but if there's a big on the floor and that's the guy you maybe have to rotate back to, and that guy is, you know, can at least mark him, or he's in a bad position on the floor, at least you're getting the ball out of Steph's hands. At least you're maybe funneling the ball away from KD or something. But you're right. It does rely on them to make the right rotations, to communicate. And this just isn't in the team's DNA. It would take something from them on another level of defense that they just have never shown that they're capable of doing for them to make that adjustment and then make it worthwhile to the point where it maybe changes the tide of a game and really puts a squeeze on Curry to either play Livingston a bunch more minutes or to have Andre Iguodala back in the series, which we know seems like it might happen in Cleveland at some point. But even then, you have to wonder how healthy he's really going to be considering the time he's missed.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it is when they miss Iguodala, that fifth guy who comes in. You know, Livingston at this point in his career just can't play, you know, more than about 15, 20 minutes a game. You know, it's tough just physically for him to get higher than that. And so you do end up having a lot of these extra fifth guys. Nick Young sometimes is in there. And then, of course, the big guys that they've trotted out. So, you know, you can see, like, in theory, you know, if they throw the ball to JaVale McGee at the free throw line and he's got to make a read with moving defenders in front of him, you know, that's, you know, in theory, that's going to work out for Cleveland more often than not. But, you know, there's going to be a few times where nobody rotates and he just glides in for a dunk. There's going to be one, you know, one time where somebody, you know, rotates from Klay Thompson and it's a one pass, you know, 3-point shot. So it's, you know, it's not as easy as just, yeah, let JaVale McGee be a playmaker, because, you know, the Cavaliers won't, I don't think they'll be able to execute that consistently every time more often than the Warriors will be able to pick them apart.
The other option is something you brought up to me when we were discussing this podcast, is the Cavs could start jamming up the screener and make it so that Hill, James, whoever is on Curry could just get through the screen and stay with Curry with minimum help. Correct me if I'm wrong, this is a version, that would be a version of what they're doing with KD. Kyle Korver, for example, when the Warriors have Jeff Green and the Cavs have Korver and Jeff Green on the floor, they've had to switch Korver onto KD in certain points. It happened a couple times in game two in the limited minutes Korver is playing. But what they're doing is they're having Kyle Korver show just enough where his arm goes out and his body is out there so that the Kevin Durant's path around the screen is sort of impeded, and then it gives Jeff Green enough time to at least get back. And KD so far has, he's obviously still scoring, he was super efficient in game two, but he's not exactly going, he's not someone who has shown that he's going to just bolt through that opening like some other guys might. He's a little bit more patient than that and a little more methodical than that, and is content to dribble the ball, so that sort of works. Versus Curry, I just wonder if, like, he needs 2 seconds to flick off a three. So, like, there's danger in that too, because if he's 3 feet, even if he's 3, 4, 5 feet behind the arc, if they do this and he gets just enough room, he's flicking a three, and that's a good shot for the Warriors offense.
Yeah, I think it's something that they can do with Durant, because of Durant's just, he's just a little bit slower on the uptake, and it's not that, you know, it's not that Durant is slow overall, it's just he's slower than Curry, because Curry's maybe got the fastest off the dribble release in the league. So, you know, it's something that can work in terms of hard, you know, sort of hard hedging or showing really hard on Durant and letting Green get through the screen. And then with Curry, you know, you can try that, and that guy, it's sort of a halfway trap where you really, you know, you jump on him and, you know, right up until his guy gets back, you know, through the screen, and then you release. And it's, you know, that's doable, but again, that takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of love, like, you know, understanding where his guy is while focusing on Curry so that he knows when exactly to release. It takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of, you know, just things that, you know, are not quite their, you know, their cup of tea, especially on this team. And so I think it's something that they should consider, because Curry's been killing them on the switches. So, you know, you got to try something else, but, you know, it's going to take, you know, something that that they're not super comfortable with. I think, you know, another thing in terms of jamming up the screener would not necessarily be that Love even really tries to defend Curry too much, but just gets really, really physical with the screener himself. And this will also work when we talk a little bit later about how they're slipping the screens to the basket. It's the more physical you are with the screener, the easier it is for the guy to get through the screen, because he's not, you know, he's being moved from, you know, his position where he wants to be to set that screen, whether it's low or high or wherever they're, you know, whichever angle they're trying to take. If you sort of chuck him on the way to setting that screen, then he's out of position a little bit, and George Hill or LeBron or whatever can get under or over whichever way they want to do that to get through that screen faster. Then Love is right there, you know, because he's, you know, fit real physical with the screen. He's right there next to the screener. He sticks a hand up for, you know, a quick second, split second, his guy, he then releases with his guy, and James or Hill is right there. It's not a perfect strategy. Nothing is going to be, you know, other world, you know, nothing's going to be perfect other than if you could just switch fluidly and not lose anything. But these are the different options they have. You know, really it's something that they should try to mix in with the switches. You know, it would obviously take more communication from Love so that he tells the ball handler, this is what I'm doing. But if they could mix up the coverages, that's the most important thing, I think, defensively. You know, when you switch everything, or you jam everything, or you hard hedge everything, then it becomes more predictable. You know, and unless you're just really, really good at that, like Houston is fantastic at switching, so they just switch everything and it's fine. But with, you know, with the Cavaliers, when they're searching for defensive answers, those are the types of things that you can consider, and especially mixing them up and doing one possession, you know, another thing for a couple possessions, and then going back to something else, especially if you, you know, sort of time that after timeouts. You switch your defense at every timeout, so they take a timeout, they go over, okay, this is how we're going to beat the hard hedge, and then you don't hard hedge for, you know, the next 6 minutes, and then, you know, it just, it helps to sort of slow down Curry's, you know, reading of the play and how he, you know, how he processes the defense if he's not 100% sure how the defense is going to play him, you know, when that screen comes up.
It would be fascinating to watch the Cavs do that because they just don't really have the personnel. It would be basically saying, well, there's like one lineup where I think you sort of would have all these defensive possibilities. You know, like when Love's on the floor, like you're going to have your issues. When Kyle Korver's on the floor and the limited minutes he's going to play in the series, it gets dangerous. But let's look at the screen switching here. The slipping of the screens that Golden State has just feasted on. The Cavs, it's not been something that has been necessarily every quarter this has been an issue. But if you look at the first quarter, for example, of Game 2, they got beat it different ways. Draymond had that lob to, I think, Jordan Bell. Curry was throwing some dimes. Livingston had a clean roll to the rim. Basically, everyone in some way is getting involved in this. And the Cavs are just losing people. Part of the reason why the Cavs had such a problem with JaVale was just because they didn't mark him correctly, and they didn't rotate back when there was that issue there. There was just this big hole in the middle of the floor. Golden State shot something like 82% in the first half of Game 2 on their two-point shots. Jeff, when you looked at this in Game 2, Golden State kind of flipped its identity on its head to some degree because they were just so dominant inside instead of outside, at least the conventional, just basic understanding of them as a team. What causes and what counter is there to the Cavs not having this become an easy thing in two games? Because if you just look at it, if you take away half of these easy baskets in the first quarter or throughout this game where you just don't get beat by slip screens, the Cavs being down by 5-4 points, maybe they take a small lead, and maybe there's just some, just at the very least, you're giving yourself just a better chance if you don't give up these super easy buckets to a team that does not need any help with easy buckets.
Yeah, I think switching is going to be inherently poor against slip screens. We saw that in the Houston series against the Utah Jazz. In Game 2 of that series, Utah slipped almost all of their ball screens, and they got a bunch of open looks right at the rim, just like the Warriors got in Game 2 of this NBA Finals series. So I think it's something that, you know, if you look at what Houston did to the Jazz after that and, you know, throughout the rest of that series, they were very physical at the point of the screen. They made it so that the screener couldn't just run straight to the screen and then run straight to the basket without being touched at all. The screener's defender, which in a lot of cases is going to be Kevin Love, Jeff Green, you know, sometimes it was Kyle Korver, you know, in certain situations, but that's a little bit different with the small guys rolling to the rim. You know, it's going to be there, you know, as Tristan Thompson as well. And, you know, Love is the only guy I think would might have some issues with being that physical at the point of attack, at the point of the screen. But I think that's the best way to sort of combat these free slips to the rim by just being, you know, being really, really physical with a guy. And if you pick up a one or two little loose ball fouls, you know, throughout the course of the game, if it saves you these, you know, 8, 10, 12, 14 points as they, you know, aren't able to just slip to the rim over and over and over again, then, you know, that trade-off makes sense to me.
When you look at just JaVale, I mean, I kind of assume he's going to start in Game 3, that it just worked for them to some degree. He, to me, is like the one that was, for me, the most infuriating one, just because he's JaVale. Like, yes, he's good, he's still athletic, and he dunks, and that, but that's just the one thing he does. And you see how much he struggles when you just make him make any kind of decision. You touched on this earlier, but he's just not a player that is particularly effective at this. And you take away a lot of his effectiveness on the floor when you just actually make him make a pass. You make him beat a guy off the dribble in these slip screens. You're right about the switching being an inherent issue. And the Cavs just also, again, did not rotate well. There's instances where whoever is in the corner opposite of the action just probably should have slid in there. And yes, like, that requires more rotation, and you're frenzied at that point, and you're probably giving up a three maybe, but you at least have to get back in there, or at least make an effort to. And for me, I think this, if I was looking at the defense, Curry is going to be Curry. if I'm Ty Lue, I wonder if this is a bigger priority for me. I don't know. I would assume you might see them try to fix both of these things. Ideally, in a perfect world for them, that they would do that. But I almost wonder if the giving up these easy buckets should be a bigger concern for the defense than Curry just being Steph Curry.
Yeah, I think it's something that they probably have considered helping really, really hard off of Draymond Green or Sean Livingston or whoever's out there in terms of, you know, another non-shooter. Because of Draymond Green's drop-off as a shooter this season, the Warriors don't play a lot of lineups with four shooters and one big guy, only when Nick Young's out there. And, you know, an open three to Nick Young is not, you know, maybe not the end of the world as compared to, you know, a wide open dunk. So, you know, maybe those are the two guys plus Sean Livingston where you really try to help off of that guy. But then, the problem, especially with helping off of Draymond Green so hard, is that he's so good at, you know, catching the ball and making a decision and getting the ball right back to Curry on a relocation or off a handoff or whatever, you can't not guard him like you can't not guard, you know, like you can do that to other shooters or other non-shooters. You know, a lot of guys who, you know, just sort of hang out in the corner and aren't that good at shooting, you can just help off of them, and you know they're going to stay put. You know they're not going to really make a play with the ball in their hands. But Draymond Green, like, they trust him to make the right pass, and he makes it more often than not. So helping off of him isn't a perfect solution. And then, of course, you're not, you know, you don't want to help off of KD or Klay Thompson. So, you know, in terms of rotating to McGee or rotating to, you know, anybody who slips to the basket like that, you know, it's hard to, you know, especially with their starting unit, assuming McGee is still out there, it's hard to see where, you know, exactly where they're going to have to rotate from. I still think that Love especially just, you know, has to be stronger against McGee when he comes up to set the screen. You know, you get in his way a little bit and, you know, maybe that tires him out a little bit more, and maybe it harms his ability to switch onto Curry quickly and make that, you know, make that read and get up there into his face so that he can't just pull a three off the screen. But, you know, it's something that they didn't, obviously they didn't have an answer for in game two. And I'm not sure where exactly that answer is going to come from. It's probably going to be a little bit of a mixture of both and see what works, whether Love is more physical or whether the rest of the Cavs just have to sort of rotate on the backside, even if it means leaving Green open and leaving themselves susceptible to a handoff or another quick screen or something of that nature.
Looking ahead at something else that just absolutely befuddled the Cavs in game two, the Warriors did a lot of work to rescreen for Steph Curry. That is not something that is new for them. That is something that is a big part of what they do. Just some of Curry's best highlights ever are when he gives up the ball, runs away, and then gets a pass back to him and just buries a three on teams. They're doing this in a way that is just particularly devastating. You wrote a really good piece about this at Fear the Sword. People can check that out in the show notes, or it'll be right on the front page of Fear the Sword right now. The Warriors were switching Love, getting Curry switched onto Curry. It wasn't necessarily as efficient as you might expect it to be, but the Cavs were just getting this hunted down over and over again. You saw the Cavs just not really have a good answer for this. How, in your mind, did this just devastate the Cavs in game two? And is there an actual counter to this aside from anything we've already talked about?
I mean, the counter for his like little relocations where he will drive and then pass the ball and then immediately sprint to the corner, you know, it's hard to say that there's anything there other than that's just a focus thing for the guy who's guarding him. Whether it's Love, even LeBron got beat by this in game two, you know, on one of those threes where Curry sort of drove, kicked it out to the perimeter, and then immediately just kept going at full speed to the corner, and James just relaxed for a bit, and then Curry was wide open. And it's happened to Love a bunch. It's happened to George Hill. It's happened to, you know, pretty much everybody who's defended Steph Curry, not just in this series, but throughout the playoffs, throughout the regular season, throughout the last few years. They're so good at whoever catches the ball on the perimeter, unless that guy is Klay Thompson or Kevin Durant and is wide open, they're looking right back to Curry if they got the pass from him. So you have to it's a focus thing. You have to stay engaged with him at all times. And it's so antithetical to the way everybody sort of learns how to play basketball throughout their career that it's hard to just, you know, flip that switch in 2 days between game two and three. But it's been such a problem for them that's got to be a big focal point for Ty Lue in the film sessions and in his pregame you know, his pregame talks to the team, you have to stay attached to him at all times. You have to stay focused that even when he gives up the ball, he's more threatening right after he gave up the ball than any other time, because that's when he's going to relocate. You're going to lose him. He's going to step behind a screen. They're always looking for him to get a corner three or a three on the wings. And that's, you know, you have to stay attached to him at all times. And then in terms of, you know, what I was sort of dubbing rescreening, which is sort of a different term. It's not technically rescreening, but I just called it that because I didn't have another name for it, where they'll run a pick and roll to get Thompson onto Curry or to get Jeff Green onto Curry, and then they'll run another pick and roll with Love's guy. You have to switch that because Green and Thompson aren't, you know, as physical as you want them to be, you know, on the screens, or if you want Love to jam up the screen or whatever, you can't, those guys aren't quick enough to get through the screen and get back onto Curry. So you have to switch that, hope that Love can hold up. He held up pretty well in game two on those specific plays. There were like five of them. And I think the Warriors only scored 2 points. And so it was, you know, that was an effective, that worked in game two on paper, that might not work long-term, but I think that worked on paper, and it worked in reality in game two. And it's the only real, you know, it's the only thing they have. They can try to trap him with four long arms, especially if it's Thompson and Love or even Green and Love. They could really try to, you know, use their height and wingspan to trap him and get the ball out of his hands. But, you know, when that short roller is Jordan Bell or David West or somebody who, you know, can take the ball and make one dribble and score, or one dribble and a good pass, you know, it just makes that even harder.
One other aspect of this that I wonder, and it relates to some of the issues we've kind of detailed already, is with George Hill. I wonder if George Hill should just be like tracking Steph Curry for at least parts of the game, just because he's long enough, he's smart enough, he's maybe the most, him and Thompson are probably just the most in the not LeBron category, because LeBron has so much else he's doing. They're sort of the two guys that just seem to know what they're supposed to be doing most of the time, at least the best. And I wonder if Hill should just be using his length to make sure he's marking Curry. Because you're right, like, Curry is just insanely dangerous that even the moment he gives up the ball, he just starts devastating you that way. And the Warriors have a lot of good passers. KD made a lot of great passes in game two. Green's a great passer. Livingston's a smart passer. Clay's a smart passer. This isn't a team that is exactly lacking for good decision makers. And Love, to his credit, again, I do think has just battled as well as you can expect him to, but he's no shade. He's Kevin Love. Like, that is just sort of what he is on the defensive end. He's going to get hunted down. Even if the Cavs do different things to try to hide him a little bit better, it's just going to be an issue with him in the series against a team like this. It would have been an issue against Houston as well. And he hangs as best as he can again, but it's Kevin Love, so there's just a limitation there. Last thing we're going to talk about, Tristan Thompson onto the short roll. He's someone who has just a very weird offensive game. It never looks comfortable. He has shown flashes in the past of being able to pass out of that short roll, out of the pick and roll, or at least make a good read out of there. He's his best offensive ability, aside from his offensive rebounding, is likely his screening. He's just an excellent screener. When you wrote about this as well in your story, what did you see from Thompson in the short roll that stood out to you?
The fact that he was a good decision maker, and the fact that he could make passes both on the move and to moving targets. You know, it was a very small sample size. They literally did it for two possessions in the whole game, in game two. But it was nice to see that when he caught the ball at the free throw line and was in that 4-on-3 advantage because they trapped LeBron at half court, that he could make the right read and he knew where the help was coming from. And if the help came from somewhere else, he knew where that guy was. You know, both times the help came from different areas. One time it came from J.R. Smith, who was actually behind Thompson by the time he caught the ball. So he knew, like, he read the play correctly and found Smith, who then found Love in the corner for a three. And then, you know, and then on the other one, Draymond Green, I believe it was, helped off of Jeff Green, who was in the corner. Green cut to the rim, so Green is now moving sort of with Draymond Green in terms of and sort of tracking him toward the paint. Thompson found him. Green blew the layup, but that's not Thompson's fault. I think Thompson, he made the right reads on both of those plays. He, you know, it doesn't look super pretty. Like, he's just sort of, it's not fluid. It doesn't look like it does when Draymond Green catches a ball and can make, you know, make any play on the floor. You know, it's a little herky jerky. It's not as fluid, but It's not robotic in the way that he has to go through his progressions. He reads and reacts well enough to where, you know, he can read the game well enough. You can see that with his screening. You know that he offensively, like, understands the angles and knows where to be. You know, you'll see him step into flare screens for guys where you don't really, like, he sees things before they're going to happen, which is always a good thing for a passer. So, you know, it was something that I had expected would work for Golden State, and then it didn't for those two possessions. And I think they sort of got scared off by it because Thompson, you know, read the game so well on both of those plays that strategy might not have worked as well as they thought it would.
I don't remember if it was the first year LeBron was back or when it was, because time is just, who knows, but they used to run this play where it would just be a Thompson, like, LeBron or Kyrie pick and roll. I'm pretty sure it was the first year back, and he would, like, get the ball at the free throw line, and he would have to, like, dribble once or twice to get to the rim for a dunk, or he'd have to pass out to the corner, and he, like, I felt like he 90% of the time made the right decision. So this was, like, a throwback to me to some degree, because of that. And, like, his screening to me, like, I tweet about this, I swear, every game, but I think the biggest thing that Larry Nance has improved on, it comes from working with Tristan. These guys work together, practice all the time. They are simpatico in a lot of ways because of the roles they play. Larry Nance Jr. is a significantly better screener because he has tried to model the physicality of his screening onto Tristan Thompson's. And you can, like, see this in the game. And you just watch the film. You watch how physical Thompson screens are, how he uses his body to about the maximum he can before he could get a foul call. Nance is starting to do the same thing. And it's, I think, helped make Nance more effective. When you look at this series, has one of them been better than the other to you? Or have they sort of just both offered different things? I think, like, RIP Larry Nance for the Steph buckets that got dropped on him in game two, but I think they've both been very good in different ways.
Yeah, they've been good in different ways. I mean, Thompson is just sort of, I think Thompson's an upgraded version of Nance. You know, he's just better at all those little things that Nance is also good at in terms of offensive rebounding, screening, reading the game, ability to stay in front of Curry in a one-on-one situation or Durant. You know, I think, like you said earlier, Nance is a little twitchy, a little jumpy in those situations. And Thompson has been in this for 4 years. He understands, you know, he knows what his limitations are and how best to defend Curry, even if it doesn't work all the time. You know, he does a better job in those situations. So, you know, I think Thompson's been better. I think Thompson is a better player than Nance and has been better in the series, but Nance is playing that backup role well enough to where you're not getting killed when he's out there. You know, you might be getting killed because he has to play with Jordan Clarkson most of the time, but it's not Nance's fault that the Cavaliers can sometimes struggle in those situations.
Jordan Clarkson, oh boy, he had a rough game too. Because even the steal he got, shout out to Hands Have It, Kyle Korver. That wasn't even his steal.
Like, he just happened.
Yeah, Kyle Korver did that work. Kyle Korver was the one who created that, and, like, it was like, oh, Jordan Clarkson, and then, like, they showed the replay, and it was very clearly Kyle Korver did this. His benching at the end of game two in the second half makes me wonder if they're either going to shorten their rotation or do something different. Anyone who's heard us talk before or, like, follows us on Twitter very much knows where we stand. But when you look as the series goes to game three, is there any reason that Jetty Osman preferably or Rodney Hood, which, shouldn't be ahead of Clarkson just for game three? Because, like, what do they have to lose at this point? I just don't know what the upside of Clarkson still getting minutes would be.
There's the only upside is if he magically discovers either a three-point shot or the fact that he is legally allowed to pass the ball. Those are the only two things that could happen.
Jordan.
And if he doesn't do either one of those things, then he's useless, and it just doesn't make sense that he's, you know, especially if LeBron is going to play 46, 47, 48 minutes. The only reason that Clarkson, you might think that he could bring some value, is when LeBron sits, they need somebody to just soak up shots. And if you can, he can sort of create his own shot against backup players in most contexts. I think that's his main skill. It's really his only skill. And it's fine when LeBron sits, but if LeBron's out there, he's going to have the ball in his hands. They don't guard Clarkson. Clarkson's terrible at making decisions and doesn't make the threes when he does decide to shoot a three. So it's really, it makes no sense that he's out there. He makes a ton of defensive mistakes. And if you're worried about playing Chetty Osman because he's a rookie and he might make mistakes. Like, what is Jordan Clarkson doing that's like, oh yeah, well, at least he's not making mistakes. It's like every possession is basically a mistake that he's making, either defensively or offensively. So Osman, you know, even if he makes a bunch of rookie mistakes, it's going to be the same end result. So you might as well, you know, I when he came in for the last 8 seconds of the first quarter, I think it was, I really thought like, okay, this is the beginning of the Osman, you know, the transfer of power from Clarkson to Osman, and Osman was going to play, you know, 8-10 minutes for the rest of the game, and he was going to be part of the rotation. And then, of course, we never saw him again. And we didn't see Rodney Hood. I don't want necessarily to see Rodney Hood. I mean, he's, you know, you would think like, oh, he couldn't be worse than Clarkson, but he definitely was through the first few rounds of the playoffs. So like, we can't just say like, oh, Rodney Hood is going to be the answer to the question, because he's definitely like, he's already had his shot and he was terrible. So Osman is the only guy who hasn't really gotten the shot at it. You know, some people are thinking at least, you know, if you throw out Jose Calderon, at least he'll be good offensively, even if he'll get torched defensively. You know, I think I'd give Osman a shot before I would Calderon. But if Osman is terrible, I would not go back to Clarkson. I'd go, you know, I think you would dust off Jose Calderon and see, you know, at least he will make the right decision offensively, and he can make shots, and he can, you know, he can run a couple pick and rolls. He can attack a closeout and make a good pass. And Clarkson, you know, he just can't do any of that. So, you know, I think that's where I would go. I would go Osman and then Calderon. And then if none of that works, the series is probably going to be over at that point anyway.
Yeah, it might be over anyway. Jordan Clarkson, by the way, shooting a whopping 30.1% from the field in the playoffs, 23.9% from three, averaging 0.7 assists and 0.7 turnovers, literally a 1-to-1 ratio of turnovers and assists in his 15 minutes a game. Jeff, the last thing, as the series goes to a game 3 and game 4 in Cleveland, are you expecting anything different, or what else are you looking out for as the series does go back to Cleveland?
I'm just looking to see sort of what, like we talked about earlier, what are they going to do about those love switches onto Curry? Are they going to let him continue to sort of try to defend Curry? Are they gonna, you know, what are they gonna do about the slip screens? Just all the little things that we've been talking about that have added up to a lot of different points for the Warriors. You know, there's a lot of little things to clean up in that sense. But you know, just looking at all of those things and looking at how, you know, how they stick with him on those relocations, what Cleveland can do offensively that isn't, you know, the two or three things that they've done well in terms of, you know, they're getting a lot of good stuff out of their corner set. They continued that in game two. Inexplicably, the Warriors, like, their great communication just breaks down when LeBron is at the top of the key and making those decisions. So if they can continue to push that advantage, then they can, you know, they can create good looks and try to hang with the Warriors offensively. So I think those are the big things that I'm looking for in game three.
Yeah, I want to see what the Cavs look like energy wise, but I do not have a real expectation that they're going to look much different. To me, it feels as if game two may have been the template for this series going forward. Golden State's going to be better. They're going to make more shots. Curry's going to be great. KD's going to be much better than he was in game one. And look, the Cavs did just look a little bit shook in game two. I think maybe getting home will be good for them, but I'm very curious to see what this looks like and if they can extend this and go back to Oracle, at least for a game five. But Jeff, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.